Welcome to this last Wednesday night gathering in July of 2025. If you came tonight for Elisha, you should come back next week, and Bill will happily lead us through that study. But tonight we're going to study the prophet Elijah, and we will I'll go through some little background on Elijah, and then kind of give a summary of his ministry. We'll read a couple of sections of my favorite selections from the scriptures that talk about Elijah's ministry, and then we'll hopefully get into the questions. We will get into the questions. I'm just not sure how far into them. So a little bit on the background. In 1 Kings 7 and 1, we were introduced to Elijah the Tishbite of the settlers of Gilead. And that's pretty much all we know about his origins. My studies say that we're not even completely sure where Tishbe or Tishba was, but most people have an idea where they think it is, and we'll show a map here in a second. But we'll talk about where we'll show where Gilead is. So I won't go into that right now. But yeah, his parents are unknown, birthplace uncertain, whether he was just from Tishbite or he was born there. We know Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but he's from Nazareth, so it could be something like that. But given where Gilead is, it's likely, but not completely certain, that he's either from the tribe of Gad or Manasseh. His name, El-Yah, El meaning being God, Yah being short for Yahweh, I guess. And his name is generally understood to mean Yahweh is my God. There's feminine versions of that, which just as a point of interest, I didn't realize that Elena was a derivation of Elijah and Elia. And if you want to, in the Greek, it's pronounced Elias. So the record of Elijah's ministry is mostly found in 1 Kings 17 through 19 and 2 Kings 1 through 2. He lived during the days of the divided kingdom, from approximately 870 to 845 B.C. And he mainly was a prophet and gave his pronouncements to the northern kingdom of Israel. And you can see the kings there that and Jezebel wasn't a king, that he was alive during their reigns and had things to say to them and do with them. And there's just he also wrote a letter to Jehoram down in Judah, and that's the only instance I think that we know of him engaging with Judah. The map I was telling you about. So this is the best depiction I could finally find of the movements of Elijah. We'll come back to this a couple of times, but you see obviously the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea down here, the Jordan River, and Gilead was kind of over here between the two on the east side of the Jordan River. Gilead, I think we had tribe of Manasseh was up kind of up here, and Gad was down in that area. And Tishbe, most people plot it somewhere right around there. They have never really actually identified exactly where it is. Just kind of that's where we'll say it is for tonight anyway. And you got the rest of Israel there, and we'll come back to this, I think, in a little bit. So, quick summary. Well, I say it's going to be quick. I'm not sure how quick it'll be, but we'll kind of go through this and stop and pause and talk about a couple of little things. But then we'll get to the questions, like I said. But we're introduced in 1 Kings 17. He goes to Ahab and prophesies that there's going to be a period of no rain or no dew. Doesn't give any end time other than when I say it's going to be over, you'll know it's over. That ended up being 3.5 years, as we'll find out. But, of course, Ahab had some problems. Israel had some problems. He was prophesying against They had really turned to the Baals quite heavily, and we had ceased most of the temple worship rituals and things that the Old Testament law said they should be doing. And of course, they were up in Israel anyway. Didn't have the temple in Israel. That was down in Judah. As the drought starts, God sends Elijah to the brook Cherith, and that's a map we'll go to later. Kind of over here, Ravine of Cherith, as it's called on this map, there to where he is watered by that brook, and he's fed by ravens a couple times a day, morning and evening. Brings him meat and things to eat as he bides his time. We don't know too much about what he's doing during that time or how much time he spent there, but eventually that brook dried up, and the Lord told him, you need to move north to Zarephath, and that is way up there. So he had quite a journey to go. Don't know how long it took him, but he obviously could probably see the devastation of the drought as he went through there and the situation in the land. Notice that Zarephath is not in Israel, right? It's in Phoenicia, but somewhere between Tyre and Sidon, and that could be considered somewhat significant. Anyone know why? From the New Testament, Jesus was preaching to in his hometown in Nazareth. He was in the synagogue teaching. And the audience at first was, oh, wow, this guy's great. He's saying great and wonderful things. And then he kind of started turning his sermon to indicate that the coming Messiah wasn't going to be a Messiah just for the Jews. Some grumbling started, I think, in the audience at that point. And he mentioned, and that's when he made his statement that a prophet is often not welcome in his own town, right? And he made the statement, one of the two examples he gave of why this Messiah was coming to everybody, not just to the Jews, was he cited this example of Elijah going to Zarephath to find a widow who would take care of him. Now, there are a lot of poor widows in Israel, but to get the help he needed, he was sent to not a Jewish widow, but a Phoenician widow, and that kind of agitated the crowd some more. And he continued to tell them, and even when we have a lot of lepers in Israel, but the one that was healed was Naaman, the Syrian general Naaman, who came down and dipped in the Jordan three times, and he's the only leper that was healed back in the day. And so, yeah, the crowd's kind of, didn't rate him too well on Yelp coming out of that one, and he left with the audience not too happy with him. At least the leaders that were in attendance. So anyway, that's kind of a long-winded kind of tie to the New Testament there. let's see. Okay, so the widow that he got sent to, of course, was poor. She had a son. She had a little jar of oil and a little thing of flour, and she was wondering, how she was possibly going to take care of Elijah with that. And Elijah said, "Don't worry about that. Those two things provided enough oil, and they never emptied, right? So they got to eat for a long time." I need to go back to my wrong way. This one. the widow's son eventually dies, which was distressing not only to the widow but to Elijah. It's not what he probably expected to happen, wanted to happen. So he takes the dead child upstairs and lays him on a bed and prays over him, not once, not twice, not three times, but I think seven times before the boy came back to life again. So the widow was, of course, very happy and declared that your God is God. And she was definitely a believer, not only from the miracle, but that. So it's about the third year of the drought. The scriptures tell us Elijah goes to Ahab again and says the drought is going to end, but he has some instructions for him that he wants him to assemble all of Israel out at Mount Carmel. And that's a part I'd like to read that. And not only all of Israel, but he wants 450 prophets of Baal to be there. And he also it mentions that there were 400 prophets of the Asherah that were also expected to be there. So all these people were gathered. And if I can get somebody to read from 1 Kings 18, 21 through 29. John. Thank you.
Elijah came to all the people and said, "How long will you fall between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him." But the people answered him, "Not a word." Then Elijah said to the people, "I alone am left prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Therefore, let them give us two bulls, and let them choose one bull for themselves. Cut it in pieces, and lay it on the wood, but put no fire under it. And I will prepare the other one, and lay it on the wood, but put no fire under it. Then you call in the name of your God, and I will call in the name of the Lord, and the God who answers by fire. He is God." So all the people answered and said, "It is well spoken." Now Elijah said to the prophet of Baal, "Choose one bull for yourselves and prepare first, for you are many, and call in the name of your God, but put no fire under it." So they put the bowl which was given them, and they prepared it, and called on the name of Baal from morning even till noon, saying, "O Baal, hear us." But there was no voice, no one answered him. Then they leaped about the altar which they had made. And so it was at noon that Elijah mocked them, and said, "Cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is meditating, or he is busy, or he is on a journey. Perhaps he is sleeping and must be awakened." So they cried aloud and cut themselves, as was their custom, with knives and lances, until the blood gushed out upon them. And when midday was past, they prophesied before the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice. But there was no voice, no one answered, no one paid attention.
Thank you. And let's go 30 through 39 as well. Bill, you might handle that.
And Elijah said to all the people, "Come near to me." All the people came near to him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been thrown down. Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the son of Jacob. And the word of the Lord came, saying, "Israel shall be your name." And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. Made a trench about the altar, great as would contain two seals of tea. He put the wood in order, cut four pieces, made on the wood. He said, "Fill four jars with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood." And he said, "Do it a second time." He did it a second time. He said, "Do it a third time." He did it a third time. And the water ran around the altar and filled the trench also with water. And at the time of the offering of your life, Elijah promised him here and said, "O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, and I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord. Answer me that this people may know that you, O Lord your God, and that you have turned their hearts back." The fire of the Lord fell, consumed the burnt offering, wood, water was drenched. All the people saw it and fell on their face and said, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God."
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to read that one because I just love that this account. Partly because it's kind of funny up front. It's not funny because all those people that were dancing around and cutting themselves were ultimately killed. There's nothing funny about that, but it's kind of funny and sad to see someone apparently sincere, but just. They had the wrong information, right? They were worshiping pieces of wood, molded metal, things like that, that they thought had some kind of power, and obviously they didn't. But I think in the questions we'll probably be drawn back to this account. So the Baal prophets are killed. I don't know what happened to those. The 400 Asherah prophets, they're not really mentioned. Maybe they were just standing around watching and kind of excused themselves when they realized what was going on. I don't know. Hopefully they repented and turned to the Lord or something, but they weren't listed as among the killed. So the drought ends. Elijah goes up to a mountain with his servant, partway up the mountain to the servant Mount Carmel, and tells the servant to look out over to towards the ocean and look for rain clouds. And he went up and down several times, reported no clouds, and finally he came back down and as Elijah was praying and said, "Well, there's a cloud that's about as big as a person's hand out there," and that was enough for Elijah. And he announced to Ahab that that he better get down off the mountain and get back to Jezreel to beat the storms that were coming. And of course the storm came, and there was plenty of water in the land again. Says Elijah hurried back to Jezreel and somehow beat Ahab back there. Don't know. There's no reason really given as to why he was doing that. Maybe he was just trying to get back there, and he was going south and get on out of there before Ahab could tell Jezebel. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, Jezebel finds out about what happened. She's very upset because she was all about the Baal worship and threatens Elijah that by this time tomorrow you're going to be dead just like all those Baal guys you killed. So Elijah is very scared. He flees and he gets to a point out there in the wilderness and asks God to just take his life. Apparently he was at that point that despondent. He ends up going all the way down to Mount Horeb. This map kind of shows it a little bit better, I think. But Horeb and most people say Horeb and Sinai are the same mountain. Maybe so, maybe not. And maybe they're here, maybe they aren't. But a lot of people put it over here instead. But anyway, he traveled quite a ways down through from Jezreel up here, all the way down there. So long journey. Scripture says it. He was attended to on the way by an angel who would provide him food and rest, and it took him about 40 days and 40 nights to get all the way down there. And we don't know exactly why he was headed down there. God never told him to go down there that we are aware of, but. He's probably just looking for an escape, would be my assessment. And God presents himself there to him. He had holed up in a cave. God said, "Come on out." And he, as we read, a big whirlwind came about as he was looking outside the cave. An earthquake happened, and a fire happened. All these things happened. And then a gentle breeze. And that's when God spoke to him again and asked him some questions about. Matter of fact, that's a section I'd like to read. So If someone can read 19, 1 Kings 19, 9 through 18. Danny, do you have that? Thank you. So we'll. I think we'll get back to this passage in the questions as well. But all that killing that those kings in the north were going to do that God just told was really going to be in fulfillment of the prophecy that had been given against Ahab's family. And continuing on, so Ahab dies, and his son assumed the throne. The Moabites rebelled. Ahaziah was somehow involved in the action. I think he fell through a lattice and gets injured at his abode, and he falls ill. I guess maybe from an infection or something like that. So he sends these messengers to inquire of Beelzebub, you know, whether he's going to survive this or not and recover. Elijah heard about it, and he intercepts the messengers, and he tells them that they need to go back and tell Ahaziah, is there no God in Israel that you could have asked? And because you ask of Beelzebub, you're going to die where you lie. So Ahaziah got that word, finding out that Elijah was in town. And he sends three groups of 50 men out to Elijah to bring him back. The first two groups are killed by fire. And the third group, I think, had heard about what was going on and very nicely asked Elijah, would you please value our lives and not kill us? Would you mind coming back with us? An angel intervened and told Elijah, you should go back with them. To Ahaziah, and he told Ahaziah what he had already told him through messengers, that because of what you've done, you're going to die for what you did, right where you are. So Elijah does end up appointing a new king of Aram, and he makes Jehu the king in Israel, and Elijah makes a final journey with Elisha, who God had told him, hey, I'm going to give you a replacement and someone to go with you. And then as we are familiar with, whoops, sorry, gave you a hint there. ends up going with Elijah after going through a few places with Elisha. They cross the Jordan, and that's where he is taken from the earth. A chariot of fire, horses of fire come down between him and Elisha, and the mantle is passed basically, and a whirlwind takes Elisha up, and I'd say never to be seen again, but that's not in fact what happens. He is seen again, as we'll I think get to. Okay, so that's kind of the rundown there. Let's get to the questions. First question was, how did Elijah exhibit faith in God during the course of his prophetic ministry? He obeyed God in many, many cases. Tony?
How bold he was with Ahab. I'm not sure who you are. I'm saying go in front of God who can kill you and support.
Right. See, he was definitely willing to speak truth to power, and had the faith that God had his back. So, I'm sorry, a little louder. He put his fear aside. Exactly. Very good. Yeah. Yep, he counted on God to take care of him. Probably wasn't expecting ravens to be feeding him, but that's definitely what happened. John? Yep. Comes on down. Yeah, he that wood would have been really, really dry after 3.5 years of drought, right? And I guess, you know, maybe there's some boy, he didn't want to be accused of having Boy Scouts out there with a little flint and steels, you know, sparking it or something. So he drenched that wood to make sure there was no doubt, no trickery going on. Going back to the time in the wilderness, we talked about this already. He went where he was told and knew that God would provide. And he kind of trusted that God always knows what he's doing, right? And so you just follow his instructions, knowing that it's the right thing because God said it was the right thing, even if you don't understand exactly what's going to happen, right? You just kind of walk by faith. He wasn't always told, I don't believe, what the end result of anything was going to be necessarily, as far as he was concerned. And just a little more in depth on the widow. You know, he went up there obviously, and they were starving themselves. He didn't go try to find a different widow. he stuck with them. Confident that God was going to provide. and honor his promises there. Okay, this is what John was getting into. Yeah, he was confident that God was going to demonstrate himself superior to Baal, that God could in fact ignite wet wood, that wasn't a problem, and that God could bring the fire, and he did. And he was also confident that Baals were just nothing, right? They were just imaginary, basically. At least any idea that they had some kind of real power was imaginary, and that God was the only true and living God. Okay. Kind of gave an answer there. I guess examples of faith is faith in prayer. He had definitely had faith that prayer would work. That was involved at the Mount Carmel showdown. And God honored that prayer up with the widow's son. You know, he kept up praying even when God didn't immediately bring that boy back to life. I think it was seven times. Maybe I'm getting that mixed up. Three times. Thank you. It was seven times for the rain cloud, I think. Yes. Yeah, he didn't stop. He kept asking, and confident that God would. There's the rain seven times. Okay. Application to us. It's not supposed to be a hard question. It should be obvious.
Obey.
Yep. Right.
In humility, is there miracles come through him, by him, yes, he can say how they can go about it. Certainly, the way Elijah presents himself, if you find himself in the person of his son, and his incredible, beautiful son, of Baal, these miracles happen, and he prays, and God would do so. And then the miracles.
Yeah.
Certainly, Elijah is God's glory and the God brings about his wrath and his sins that one is.
Yep.
Sir. You used to have a word earlier that God can be intended to the prophet of Baal or sincere.
Right, yeah. You kind of respect a little part of that, right? But yeah, they at least believed what they were doing. Yeah.
So for putting all that pressure on himself, it's so easy to say, well, I prayed that God mend the drought, and he didn't do it, and I'm doing my best. He never made him like that, and accepted it to be part of us. And the great hardship for them and himself. So to me, it's the 3+ years of hardship that we show, and I think not just to them.
Yeah, right. Very good. Yeah, and I think, you know, when we pray, often we don't get an immediate answer, right? And so one of the lessons I took from this is keep praying the same thing over and over. I mean, it looks like he was doing it, you know, in a short period of time over and over. But for us, I mean, daily prayers or once a week or whatever, if we have something that's on our heart that we want to God to do for us, keep praying it, and you never know. You know, God will answer in His time. As we see with Elijah, his time wasn't the first six times for the rain, but it was the seventh time, and he answered it. So, question two. Gave you the answer again. One of the answers I was thinking of by accident. So where do we see Elijah's faith maybe falter or be lacking in the account of his ministry? He's not a perfect person. Great. As you mentioned, he did become afraid of Jezebel, and I guess lost confidence momentarily anyway, that God was going to protect him from that. Tony. You covered a whole lot of stuff. I think you're spot on, Tony. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you too. I think you just hit. In fact, I'll go through these slides a little bit, and you're going to see what you guys are saying. Thank you. Getting overly discouraged at one point. Hey, God, can you take my life? Tony, and you were both addressing these circumstances. I think he was distressed, knowing that all that 3.5 years and the dramatic miracle that had happened didn't fully accomplish what he thought it should, and so he probably seen that was a setback there. It's interesting. Some of the leaders were probably the main ones, at least the first ones that we read about. That weren't, they didn't turn. They didn't turn back to God, right? They were just kind of more angry than they were. It just kind of reminded me of, Abraham in the account of Lazarus and the rich man. If they don't listen to Moses and the prophets, they're not going to be persuaded even if someone rises from the dead. I think they were at that point. It didn't matter what happened at Mount Carmel. They weren't going to, accept it in turn. As some people, that's just where they're at, and they never will. what factors might have, led to them not repenting and turning, kind of like Pharaoh. I was reminded of Pharaoh, and in the face of all those miracles, he was very slow to let them leave Israel. But pride, unwillingness to admit their wrongdoing, unwillingness to admit that they're wrong, fear of losing their power, and just don't care about spiritual things, right? They're focused on the worldly things. Some people are just there. I was reminded of the Matthew 19:24 reference too, where Jesus says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the gates of heaven. I think you could probably substitute for a powerful person to go through the gates of heaven, kind of a similar thing there. It's difficult when you're in a position to. Is it just powerful leaders that are susceptible to this kind of thing? I think the answer is no, not necessarily. We can all be susceptible to that kind of thing in our little parts of our lives and in our part of the world. Keep going. He allowed his discouragement and tiredness to convince him to run far away. I think we said we kind of understand that. We've been in places like that ourselves, most of us, I'm sure. So he was running from something. I don't think it was like Jonah, because Jonah did run to try to get away. He ran for a different reason. He just disagreed with what God was telling him to do. kind of went through those circumstances. Okay, how did God help him to restore his faith? And it's been addressed somewhat.
But I think the most important piece was the encouragement. Elijah couldn't see it, but God said, there are 7,000 in Israel who have not found valid need to fail. Now, 7,000 is not a lot. And none of those 7,000 seemed willing to stand up for him after the fire was done and the prophets were,
Where were they?
I'm reminded of, we sometimes seek encouragement when we're teaching, right? That, I planted a Apollos water in God and only gives the increase. God said, I have reserved to myself 7,000 who not bow to me fail. That's God's business, it's not ours. We just do what he tells us to do the best.
Good point. God's gentle and compassionate response. You mentioned, and definitely. It was interesting how he sent the fire and the earthquake and the whirlwind before he got to the gentle wind, and that's when God spoke up. I don't know what God's intent there, but maybe he was just demonstrating. Elijah, I'm thinking, oh man, I'm really going to get it now. This is looking, and then guy gave him a nice gentle response. Gave Elijah another mission. That probably helped too. Hey, there's more work to be done. And gave him a traveling partner. That was mentioned too. So good job, everybody, on those. I think we're out of time, so I won't keep going. We can talk after class if you want about answers to the last question. Thank you very much for your input.